good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to the night before Christmas program. Well, not really program. We're going to do our night before Christmas program tomorrow night, but tomorrow night will not really be the night before Christmas. It'll be the night before the night before. Never mind. It is the 22nd of December. How are you doing with your Christmas madness? Huh? I've always kind of liked this time of year, but I think it's because I always intended to insulate myself from an awful lot of the commercial aspects of it. When I was a kid growing up, it was because there wasn't a whole lot of commercial aspects of it available to us. But I still find it a very intriguing time of year. Once you get away from, or at least this is true with me, once you get away from the hubbub, the traffic, the malls, we really don't shop in malls at Christmas. What we do is, over the course of a year, when we go to art fairs and stuff, you know, we try to pick up things, thinking ahead to Christmas. As far as Santa's gifts to Molly, there's a place here, what is it, School Box? It's called the School Box. It's a toy store, but it's also for teachers use it a lot. There's some really intriguing games and toys, plain old toys in there for kids. I went into Toys R Us the other day because my grandson wants a guitar stand. He's turning out to be quite the guitar player and songwriter. At how old is he? 9. It's pretty pretty spooky. But I mean, spooky in a good way. But I went to Toys R Us to get him a guitar stand and got the last one. But just wandering through the aisles, looking at the stuff that's for sale and looking at the people with the carts, the shopping carts loaded up with stuff. And I don't know. It was just kind of strange. I realized that when you go into Toys R Us, the people that are in there are shopping for children. I mean, it's not like they're shopping for each other. They're shopping for children. I want to get to that a little bit later on tonight. But anyway, tomorrow night is our Christmas Eve program, and I hope you're going to be here. We have elements to the Christmas Eve program that we've had for a number of years. O Holy Nightmare is sung. What else do we have? Night Before Christmas, Molly will climb up on my lap for the, this is the fourth time, Kathy? Fourth time. My son Chris, who's now 31, used to do this back in the early days of my doing radio. So we'll have that. We'll have Night Before Christmas. We'll have O Holy Nightmare. We have a very special episode of Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe, written and produced by Bob Alexander, that I've listened to it 3 times in the past 2 days, and I'll tell you, this is a good one. It will probably offend some people, but it's a good one. What else do we do, Kathy? Normally I read from the book of Luke. I might do that again, just because I like legends. I like the mysticism, and also, well, that's right. We have a real nice piece on the winter solstice written by Bridget Wolf, who has the website along with her husband, fairywoodland.com. If you haven't been there, I haven't mentioned that lately, fairywoodland.com. We have a couple of pieces of her husband, John's art. And if you have not been to fairywoodland.com, man, you need to go there just if for no other reason to look at some of the stuff there. So we have that, a solstice piece, Christmas according to Luke, the Nativity according to Luke, Night Before Christmas with Molly, a Radio Gumshoe episode, Nightmare Before Christmas. That should be enough. That should be plenty. And then I believe that program, Wednesday's program, will be rebroadcast Thursday night, which is the real Christmas Eve, and then again Friday night, which is Christmas night. So if you miss it tomorrow night, you've got two more chances. Yet, like, yeah, Christmas Eve, you're going to be listening to the Malloy Show. Right. But anyway, that's kind of the schedule. And tomorrow night also will be our last night on the air live until January 4th, I believe. We have some rebroadcasts that will filter in there, courtesy of our friends in the station in Dallas, Texas. Brad Friedman, who normally is connected with our friends at the station in Los Angeles, will be filling in for us. I think he'll be doing that from Dallas, maybe from L.A. So if you tune in some night to this program while we're gone and you have dead air, you'll know that the equipment didn't turn on right. Or if you hear something that shouldn't be there, it's because the equipment didn't turn on right, and all the station, I'm freaking all the stations out down the line right now, and Sirius and XM, they're listening to this going, what? And plus our friends up at, Westwood One Satellite Company, they're going, what? So just in case, it doesn't mean we have been eaten by the flying monkey right, or that we're disappeared. It just means at that point we'll probably be unemployed, because radio stations don't like dead air. Glenn Beck has been added again. Another example of his work, this one from Honolulu. A woman accused of threatening to kill Michelle Obama has been arrested in Honolulu. You know, the Obama family plans to travel there after, after this health insurance thing is signed or passed or something. The Secret Service says a woman named Christy Lee Rocia, they had her picture at AOL, called the Boston office of the Secret Service last month and told a receptionist, I will kill Michelle Obama. I will kill Marines. She was taken into custody after threatening to kill Michelle Obama. So Glenn Beck's work continues on. He is like Jim Jones. He appeals to the madness that exists in probably most of us. That, you know, the only thing that keeps us civilized is to keep that insanity tamped down as best we can, however we do it. But sometimes if you have someone like Glenn Beck, like Jim Jones, like people who get others to commit these crazy acts, it's hard to keep that insanity tamped down. So another Glenn Beck listener, arrested in Hawaii. She was arrested on Saturday after she told Secret Service agents who were interviewing her that she knew where President Barack Obama and his wife would be staying during their visit to the islands, and that she was in fact planning on killing Michelle. So this is the kind of madness that is loosed when you have psychopaths on radio and television encouraging it, promoting it, pushing it to the surface, no matter how, with how much restraint people try, who are sick and maybe know they're sick, or at least know within their sickness that there's certain things they can't do, like threaten the life of the president or the first lady or the children or what have you. But when you have a guru of insanity like Glenn Beck tampering with people's minds via the radio, you know, those electric signals that come out and get into their heads. It's difficult for some people to keep that stuff under control. So Glenn Beck has another feather in his cap, another person arrested, charged with planning to kill the First Lady. These are weird times, Truth Seeker. I can't think of times that have been too much weirder. So, anyway, as we get into tonight's program, stick around. We will have some fun things for you tonight. If you like the macabre, I'm Mike Malloy.
Redefining Anger Management. It's Mike Malone.
21 past the hour. Gordon in Oklahoma City sent me an email with a link to it, and I don't know if the sound... we'll have the sound a little bit later in the program tonight, but there was a plea from Senator Tom Coburn the other night, and he was calling for those imprecatory prayers, those ones where the Christian crazy people pray to God to hurt someone or to kill someone or otherwise stop someone from doing something. I've had those leveled against me by the Christian psychopaths here in the Atlanta area years and years and years ago. And it's really freaky. But Tom Coburn had called for divine intervention to cause a member of the U.S. Senate to miss a vote on the health care bill the other night. That's what he said. He wanted the Christian crazies. I don't know. I don't know when this is going to stop, but what he said was, quote, what the American people ought to pray is that somebody can't make the vote tonight. That's what they ought to pray. Now, there's no doubt what he's talking about there. I think what they were praying for is for the senator from West Virginia, you know, the oldest guy in the Senate, Robert Byrd, to either die or faint or something. These people are really, really sick, and they, like I mentioned before, more and more American voters are switching out of the undecided or independent or conservative Democrat column into the Republican / conservative. I don't know what's going on. I guess it's just gut level fear. When people get scared, they usually align themselves with murderers and thugs that they think will protect them. But the only problem is the one senator who missed the vote was a fellow cult member, the vile James Inhofe from Oklahoma, the same as Tom Coburn. Ah, unintended consequences, right? And then Think Progress posted a video where one of these crying teabag lunatics called C-SPAN, and we're going to have the sound for you in a few moments, but this caller wanted to know, the guy that was on C-SPAN on the program, what is it, that one in the morning, Washington Journal, they had Barrasso. This crazy, freakish, is he a senator? I think he is. I'm not that familiar with Barrasso. But they had him on, and a guy calls in from down here in South Georgia. You'll hear it when we play it for you. And wanted to know if the prayer had backfired, because all the Democrats showed up. None of them died. And yet Inhofe was missing for the vote. Not the one the other, not Sunday night's vote, but I think Monday night's vote. They had another vote yesterday. And Inhofe wasn't there. So this poor, misguided psychopath from South Georgia who believes this stuff, that you can pray someone into hell, or you can issue up these imprecatory prayers to make somebody be wounded or dead, and that, you know, God will listen to your prayer and say, you know, I think Tom Coburn's right. Let me see, who can I kill over there on the Republican side or the Democratic side of the United States Senate on that little dot of snot called Earth? Let me see. I know, I'll pick that one. It is bizarre beyond belief. But I want you to hear this. Gordon in Oklahoma sent it to me. And as Gordon writes, the teabag cult are convinced that Jehovah, Yahweh, I am, L, or capital G dash lowercase d, will do a hit job anytime they contact him on their speed dial. he has their numbers all right, and they're all on call block. So we're gonna pull up that sound for you because I want you to hear this. It's just bizarre. What else we got? Oh yeah, Sarah Palin pops up out of the slime again. She said that the forthcoming merged health care bill, the House and the Senate, will probably have the death panels in again. I want to laugh. I want to fist bump my friends and say, look at the madness. Aren't you glad we're not part of the madness? But you know what? These are people running the country. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
The primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. All right, here's the setup. It was on, what's that program again, Kathy? Washington Journal? Washington Journal? Yeah, on C-SPAN in the morning. Let me set it up for you again. Just before the Senate vote on the first of the three procedural motions that were necessary to move the current health care insurance reform bill toward final passage, Tom Coburn, who I believe is a doctor and a Christian psychopath from Oklahoma, he urged Americans to pray that a member of the majority caucus would not show up to vote, and that would leave the Democrats one vote shy of breaking the threatened Republican filibuster. Now, imprecatory prayer is designed for one thing. It's designed to call upon their crazed God to hurt someone, to kill someone, to interfere, to, you know, it's really vicious, it's satanic stuff. It is Christianity inverted. It is goat's heads and, blood. I mean, it's horrible stuff. Coburn said the following, quote, "What the American people ought to pray is that somebody can't make the vote tonight. That's what they ought to pray." Now, that was for, I think that was for Sunday night. As it turned out, all 100 senators voted on the measure, which passed on a party line vote 60-40. Today, Tuesday morning, today, the Senate health care bill jumped the second procedural hurdle, again with 60 senators in the Democratic caucus voting to pass the measure. But only 39 Republicans voted against it. James Inhofe, the crazy religious psychopath from Oklahoma, another one, Tom Coburn's buddy, was the Republican who missed the vote. So on C-SPAN this morning, a caller wondered if perhaps Coburn's prayer request had backfired against his own party. Now, I want you to listen to this. The guy talking is Senator John Barrasso, a Republican religious psychopath from Wyoming. Starts out with the caller.
Yeah, doctor, our small teabag group here at Waycross, we got our vigil together and took Dr. Colbert's instructions and prayed real hard that Senator Burr would either die or couldn't show up at the vote the other night. How hard did you pray? Because I see one of our members is missing this morning. Did it backfire on us? One of our members died. How hard did you pray, Senator? Did you pray hard enough?
Senator Barrasso, he was referring to Senator Inhofe, who was not part of the round of voting this morning.
The votes today, they needed 60 votes in favor of the bill. Senator Inhofe is opposed to the bill, and whether he was there or not, it didn't make any difference. There was no way that Jim Inhofe was going to vote for the bill. Senator from Oklahoma, that's why he wasn't there this morning.
Do you know where he was, Senator, why he wasn't able to make the vote this morning?
No, I don't know.
Now, I need to tell you something about Waycross, Georgia. Waycross, Georgia is right on the edge of the Dismal Swamp. The what is it down there, Kathy? Okefenokee? What's the one in Florida? That's the Everglades. Yeah, the Okefenokee Swamp down in South Georgia. And it's a huge area of South Georgia that just never recovered from the last glacial age when, cuts and gouges were dug into the earth as these retreating glaciers dragged boulders back. And the swamp, it's where the Pogo crew lived. If you remember the Pogo cartoon strip, they all lived down in the Okefenokee Swamp. But the people who live in Waycross, Georgia, for the most part, are totally infected and affected by that damn swamp. I've had a couple of people that I knew that moved up here from there, moved from Waycross, moved up to Atlanta. I've known them, haven't met them yet. I think the Haints got them and ripped their heads off, but knew them years ago. And some of the stories they told me about Waycross went beyond scary. I mean, you hear weird stories about the Deep South. You hear weird stories about small town Deep South. But when you hear weird stories about small town Deep South on the edge of a swamp, talk about the gators got you, granny. I mean, for real. And so the fact that this poor bastard called from Waycross, you know, he did what he was instructed to do. He said it. We all got together and prayed real hard that Senator Byrd would either die or couldn't show up. Can you believe that? Now, you notice how Senator John Barrasso, Republican of Wyoming, you notice how he avoided answering the question. This poor bastard from Waycross said, "How hard did you pray? Because I see one of our members was missing this morning. Did it backfire on us? Did one of our members die? Did you pray, Senator?" Yeah. My God. Have you got it ready? Have you got it ready right there again? I want you to hear the caller again. This is unbelievable, but trust me. Yeah, but
okay, look, just cue up the Christmas tree.
Trust me, what you're about to hear is real, if we can find it here. Have we got it?
Feedback group here at Waycross. We got our visual together at Dr. Colbert's instructions and prayed real hard that Senator Byrd would either die or couldn't show up at the vote the other night. How hard did you pray? Because I see one of our members is missing this morning. Did it backfire on us and one of our members died? How hard did you pray, Senator? Did you pray hard enough?
Can you see? I mean, this is astonishing. These are United States senators. Coburn tells these poor, miserable, misguided, blinded bastards to pray for somebody's death. Because, you know, all Coburn said was, what the American people ought to pray is that somebody can't make the vote tonight. That's what they ought to pray. That's code. Everybody who is a crazy Christian, a fundamentalist Christian, they understand what that means. That's code for imprecatory prayer. That's code. Coburn couldn't say, "I want you all to get out there and pray that Senator Byrd will die." But that's exactly what the message is. And this poor bastard down in Waycross, can you imagine? He's walking around Waycross, Georgia, And trust me, it's not a very pleasant sight down there. He's walking around Waycross, Georgia, with apparently some kind of burden on him now. See? You heard him start crying. He spent the night with his teabag group praying for a senator's death. Praying for a senator's death. Senator didn't die, but James Inhofe is missing. Uh-oh.
Do you think we prayed the wrong thing, or did it backfire?
Man. And there are people who are proud Republicans. Yeah. Anyway, thanks to Gordon, Oklahoma City, who turned me on to this whole thing. Now, that's not bad enough. Sarah Palin today said that the forthcoming merged health care bill could contain those death panels that she talked about over the summer. According to Jordan Fabian writing at The Hill, Palin took to Twitter saying that the merged bill could be unrecognizable from what the House passed and what the Senate passed. She said, merged bill may be unrecognizable from what assumed was a done deal. Regarding death panels back in, what's punishment for not purchasing mandated health care? So now, if you don't buy it, they may kill you. Jesus Christ! Oh! You remember in her first death panel, Insanity, Palin wrote in a Facebook note. Boy, she just wrote up her Facebook and Twitter. Yeah. She wrote that seniors, quote, have to stand in front of Obama's death panel so his bureaucrats can decide based on a subjective judgment on their level of productivity in society and, you know, whether or not they should be put to sleep or something. Of course, the lie of the year is that death panel nonsense. I don't care what you think about the health care plan, and I think it sucks. But it's one thing to disagree politically with people who have put together this health insurance reform thing. It's something else, again, to order your completely, I guess their brains are half eaten with religious cancer, to order those people to pray for somebody's death so that they can't vote? This is Christianity.
Radio right from the left. It's more Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour, we also have a report card from Kay Petrini coming up after the next break. I like this. A priest in Northern England, the Reverend Tim Jones, has caused somewhat of an uproar. He told his congregation that it is sometimes acceptable for desperate people to shoplift, to steal, as long as they do it at large national chain stores rather than small family businesses. Boy, I like this guy. He's a priest in Northern England, so the commandment says, thou shalt not steal, isn't exactly written in stone, I guess. His sermon from, I think it was last Sunday, drew rebukes today from fellow clergy, from shop owners, and from the police. His pulpit is at the Church of St. Lawrence in York, about a couple hundred miles north of London. And the preacher said in his sermon Sunday that shoplifting can be justified if a person in real need is not greedy and doesn't take more than he or she really needs, you know, to get by. Oh, Lord. The remarks drew a summons from Archdeacon Richard Seed, who said on his website that the church rejects the view that shoplifting can be acceptable. He said, quote, the Church of England does not advise anyone to shoplift or break the law in any way, end quote. Seed's statement went on to say, quote, Father Tim Jones is raising important issues about the difficulties people face when benefits are not forthcoming, but shoplifting is not the way to overcome these difficulties. There are many organizations and charities working with people in need, and the Citizens Advice Bureau is a good first place to call, end quote. Citizens Advice Bureau. I don't know what that is. It must be strictly a Brit thing. And a spokeswoman for Archdeacon Seed, I like that name, said the Archdeacon wants to meet with Pastor Jones, or Reverend Jones, I should say, to discuss the, quote, appropriateness, unquote, of his sermon. Meantime, Reverend Tim Jones told the Associated Press that he stands by his comments. He said he regretted only that the media is focusing on his view on shoplifting rather than the underlying problem he wanted to address. Well, isn't that just like the typical media, though, Tim? I mean, come on, Reverend Tim. Then he said this, quote, Reverend Tim did. He said, the point I'm making is that when we shut down every socially acceptable avenue for people in need, then the only avenue left is the socially unacceptable one. And he added that people are often released from prison without any means of support, which leads them back into crime. Reverend Tim said, quote, what I'm against is the way society has become ever more comfortable with the people at the very bottom and blinded to their needs, end quote. He said shoplifting could help people who are legally entitled to government welfare benefits but have the benefits delayed for bureaucratic reasons. Now, the North Yorkshire Police also condemned Reverend Jones' approach as counterproductive because people already in marginal conditions would find themselves in trouble with the law if they resorted to shoplifting. Oh, my God. Well, I think Reverend Tim is right on. Right on target, I really do. You know, someone who's desperately in need. I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, what would you do, Truth Seeker? Let's do a little thought puzzle here. Supposing, you know, your child was starving and they're desperately hungry at home, and you had exhausted everything, every means of trying to get some kind of help. You were not at home. You were living in your car. Your spouse left you. You're there with your two children who are desperately hungry, and you walk into one of these big box stores, and you see all this garbage packaged to look like real food. But what are you going to do? I mean, and you're broke. Are you going to take something? I would get a shopping cart and load it up and just walk out the door. And if they stop me, I would say, do you want me to put an imprecatory prayer on your ass and get in the car and feed my kids? Oh. These are strange times when you have United States senators asking people for imprecatory prayer to pray that a member of the Senate, a Democratic member of the Senate, will somehow be prevented from showing up for a vote on health care reform. What kind of a sick deity do these psychopaths believe in? Don't answer. I know what kind of a sick deity they believe in. Man, do they ever stop to think that they could be the object of imprecatory prayer, that maybe, you know, that's a pretty good idea. I wonder how many of us it would take to pray Tom Coburn into hell. Nah, just kidding. Just kidding. If we want to get him into hell, we just put some juju on him and, you know, do a little dance with the inverted goat's head, and we're there. All right, this is madness. We have a break. We'll be back after the break, and we're going to have a report card from Kay Petrini. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Do you want me to make it tonight, this program? How crazy do you want me to? I've got a story here that was sent to me that, I don't know, man. I just don't know. Chris Floyd wrote this today. You got to hear this. Chris writes, it sounds like something Mikhail Bulgakov might have written. Remember, I've talked about him on this program, The Master and Margarita. If you haven't read that, go read it. Chris Floyd, this sounds like something Mikhail Bulgakov might have written, deep in the sinister phantasmagoria of the Stalinist night. This is from the Israeli service ynetnews.com. Quote, one of the large mental health hospitals in Israel was recently surprised to receive a young, good-looking patient in a psychotic state who was accompanied by a personal security guard. That's according to Yedioth Ahronoth newspaper, reported on Sunday. The doctors, who asked why the woman was accompanied by a guard, were shocked to learn that she was a Mossad agent and that the security guard was not assigned to her in order to assure her safety or protect her life. The Mossad agent was assigned to her to ensure that she not revealed any state secrets in her shaky mental state. The Mossad's guard's orders were clear. Quote, it is forbidden that the organization's secrets be passed on to those unauthorized to hear them, end quote. The doctors, who are unaccustomed to the presence of a third party during their treatment sessions, were left with no choice but to acquiesce to their demands. In addition, the staff had to receive a security clearance before being allowed to work on her exceptional case. To their complete amazement, another young woman, also accompanied by a secret agent, charged with ensuring that she, too, not leak any state secrets, arrived at the institution just a short time later. The doctors learned that she, too, is a Mossad agent. End quote. YNetNews.com via Yadayath Aranath newspaper. Chris writes, it seems evident that the young women were driven mad by acts they have witnessed or carried out. These acts were literally unspeakable crimes of the state, hence the presence of the state's goons to prevent the slightest whisper of the dark deeds from escaping. The story's efficacy as both paradigm and prophecy for our modern world could hardly be bettered. Woo! I mean, like I said, how weird you want to make it? The night before Christmas. How weird do you want to make it tonight?
Truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. I think it's time that we took some phone calls. If you'd like to join in the discussion here, that would be great. While we're waiting, the phone number is 877-996-2556. Jay writes in, I know catastrophic climate change upsets you, Mike, but did you catch what Naomi Klein said regarding Copenhagen? The bottom lines are that, one, it is all about resources, and that, two, it is a cull, C-U-L-L. People are dying now, soon in huge numbers. But people don't just die. First, they kill each other for what's left of the resources. They've known that catastrophic climate change is coming, they being Exxon and their ilk. But tobacco industry-style biostitution, like prostitution, is being used yet again to squander lives. Meanwhile, the theater of the absurd that is the economic downturn is just another distraction. Is Chevron losing money? Hell no. They're down here doing to Australia what they did to Ecuador. Corporatists aren't red or blue, and the people's government is merely their tool. The two-party structure is just a disguise to obscure the corporatist state. We didn't really elect Obama. He was strategically allowed to win. They, quote, knew that after Cheney and Bush, a Democrat would take too much of the vote to allow them to steal it again. So they let someone win who would serve their needs. They always had a Palin as backup. Either way, chaos would erupt, and chaos is what they wanted. But with Obama, they hit the chaos trifecta. They knew the Republicans would hemorrhage stupid in reaction to any Democrat, but a, one, black man, two, with liberal affectations, and three, a weird, scary name to provide endless false trail distractions. Perfect! They needed us distracted for what was to come, and the stupid-fueled chaos is working. Make up a rumor, spread it on the net, even if it's unsourced. It then gets regurgitated on the news. Doesn't matter if it isn't true, because it, rather than the truth, is being discussed. Meanwhile, we are being culled. The richest 1 or 2% are not worried. Catastrophic climate change is their little end-of-day soiree And there are plenty of us begging to be their slaves. But the rest of us can have a party of our own, a third party. I've said it before, I'll say it again. Step up, progressives, this is our time. The planet may be broken, but that just means we can get it cheap. Maybe there is a hell on Earth. So bring on the rapture. If all that's left are cockroaches and progressives down here, it'll be better than the stew of stupid we're swimming in now. Ooh. Ooh. From Jay, who is currently ensconced in Australia. It is crazy, isn't it? It is crazy. Absolutely crazy. Just let me mention again that tomorrow night is as regular a program as we ever put on. And then Wednesday night is our winter solstice program with some Christmas undertones or overtones or side tones or resonances. Everything in the traditional Christmas celebration has been ripped off from pagans and Celts and Wiccans anyway. So having said that, I don't want to, you know, be the Grinch who stole Christmas from anybody. If you know, people get a lot of fun, I think people still get fun out of Christmas, just like they get a lot of fun out of Hanukkah or... I can't think of a fun Muslim holiday. I know they exist. I'm not trying to be a smartass here, but I can't think of one, and I dare not say one for fear I'll get it wrong, and then I'll get a bunch of emails telling me to do better research. Eid, is that how you pronounce it? E-I-D, Eid? Is that a fun one? I don't know. I think any religious holiday is fun on the surface, but underneath you find all that darkness and weird stuff. Just waiting. As soon as you're having a good time, the weird stuff reaches up and bites you on the ass. You know what I'm saying? We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Ties and socks. My kids are never happy with what's under the tree. Soon they'll understand Christmas sucks. Whoa, every freaking year Christmas sucks. Christmas sucks.
The sale from Saturn is here with the biggest savings ever on every remaining new Saturn, or 0% financing for qualified buyers plus bonus cash. Length of contract limited. Take delivery by January 4th. It's about 25 before the hour. All right, time to do some phone calls, huh? Jason's in Clarksville, Tennessee. Hey, Jason.
How are you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
Doing good. I called you a couple weeks ago. I was a pretty heavy listener to, you know, Beck, Kennedy, Rush, all of them.
Yeah.
And I got XM Radio, and I turned it on one day when I saw the America Left. I turned it on really thinking, oh, this is going to be rich. You know, I can't wait to see what these people are saying.
Yeah.
And I caught your show, and I can honestly say since then that, you know, the stress that you feel listening to the Republican talk radio is unbelievable, because all it is doom and gloom.
All it is what?
Doom and gloom. I mean, it's just, all they talk about is how bad everything is. And I'd really just like to thank you for what you're doing. I mean, just 2 weeks of listening to your show has really changed my mind. I mean, a 180 from what I thought about everything. You know, but I never knew really, and maybe it's that I wasn't so much a conservative as I thought I was. I mean, I don't know. But it's, maybe that's just all that I had ever heard. And I mean, it's really enlightened me a lot listening to you on the radio, and I really just like to thank you. I almost want to apologize to the American people just for being a Republican almost. That might sound weird, but as bad off as that is, that's kind of how it is. I mean, I'd like to thank you for what you're doing.
Well, I appreciate it, Jason. The only thing I can come up with is that you probably weren't as committed to that insanity as you thought. I mean, we don't do a whole lot on this program except, talk about the issues. It's not an attempt to get anyone to think a certain way as it is on these right-wing shows. As a matter of fact, I get a lot of email from people telling me I'm crazier than a loon, which is fine. I'm totally immune from that stuff at this point anyway. But, I would imagine, you know, I'd like to take a lot of credit, Jason. I can't, because I don't believe that, people who, as you say, do a 180 were that, in such a short period of time, were really that committed to begin with. So anyway, I'm glad you found Liberal Talk, and I hope you keep listening, man. Have a good holiday. Thanks, Jason. I guess what I'm thinking about here is my own dedication to two things over the course of my life, the biggest part of my life. First of all, the religion that I was brought up in. I was never a big, ardent advocate of Christianity, but, I had it in my head and in my bones and in my unconscious and so on and so forth that such a thing existed. And, theism, the Christian variety. And it took a long time, a lot of thought, a lot of research, a lot of reflection, a lot of insight, inward thinking, a lot of reading, not just theologians, but anti-theologians, if you will, and to come to the conclusion that Christianity and, by extension, all religions are, they're mythologies. They serve some function, but they're nothing more than mythologies, neither more nor less than any religious mythology has existed. Yeah, pick one. There have been hundreds of them. And secondly, was my dedication to the Democratic Party. I was immersed and inculcated in the Democratic Party principles. And I still believe in those principles, but I'm not a Democrat anymore because it has changed into something that I find screechingly abhorrent, much the same way as religion has. So, but that took, took a long, 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 long time in both of those. And I maintain that people who change very quickly were not really dedicated to the belief from which they turn all that deeply to begin with. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? It makes sense to me, damn it. Nancy's in Sebring, Florida, listening on Sirius. Hey, Nancy.
Hi, good evening, Mike.
Hi.
Love the show.
Thank
you.
Well, thank you.
I am a state employee, and I work with a lady who is just an absolute right-wing wacko Republican. And I was walking through the office today and talking about health insurance, and I was complaining that we didn't get the single payer and, better choices. And she goes, "Well, not me." She said, "I am thrilled to death to have my health insurance, and I don't want any government involved in it." And I said, "Well, wait a minute. You work for the state. You have a government-run health insurance." And she said, "No, I don't. I have Blue Cross and Blue Shield." I said, "Sweetie, it's negotiated and run by the state of Florida on your behalf." And she said, "No, I don't. The state doesn't have anything to do with it."
Oh, my.
It ended up in... It was such a ludicrous statement that I just sort of walked away from it. that because I admire your comebacks and your comments, I just wanted some feedback, first of all, that it is, in fact, a state-run program, and just some pointers to kind of for my next discussion with her.
Well, I'm not sure how that one works, but if the state of Florida, if she's a state employee and she has health insurance negotiated by the state, and it's through Blue Cross Blue Shield, I don't know how Blue Cross Blue Shield is constituted in the state of Florida. That used to be, back when I was a kid. Oh my God, I can remember my mother. Way back in the day had Blue Cross, health insurance. That's how we all got our tonsils out, my brothers and sister and I. But, I don't know how it's constituted now. I think she's, talking kind of moronically to say that, there's no government involvement. Does she think that she picked this policy, that she determined what would be covered and what would not be covered, or does she think that the state of Florida did? I mean, that would be a question to ask her. Who negotiated the terms of your insurance package?
Yes, that's exactly right. I didn't quite get that far with her because she was like, well, no, this is my insurance. And I said, well, you're very lucky that you have good insurance.
Well, the other thing, too, you can ask her what happens if you quit your job or you get fired, which is not, that doesn't indicate that it's government run. It just means that, if she worked at General Motors and lost her job, she would lose her insurance. But I guess the most immediate question that comes to my mind that I would ask her is, who negotiated the terms of your health insurance? Was it you or was it the state of Florida?
Yeah, I said, well, you picked the carrier that the state offered you. I said, but if the state dropped Blue Cross of Blue Shield, you wouldn't still have it. You would just pick another carrier. I said, so in that sense, you're picking the carrier, but you are still covered under a government sponsored insurance. And of course she hates the thought of that because she just doesn't believe in any kind of government run anything.
How old is she, would you guess? Just guess.
50. Oh, she's 50-ish.
50-ish. Ask her, this might work. Of course I pretty much can guess what her answer would be, but you might want to ask her, well, what are you going to do when you're 65? Are you going to absolutely, utterly, completely, totally refuse Medicare?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the thing about it is, in Florida, Blue Cross Blue Shield is the carrier for Part B of Medicare, and each state, of course, negotiates who their Part B carrier is.
Mm-hmm.
Not every state has the same Part B carrier.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be like people on Medicare saying, well, I don't have Medicare. I have Blue Cross and Blue Shield, which is absolutely ridiculous.
Right.
They simply are the negotiated carrier for Medicare. If you live in Kentucky, the negotiated carrier is Metropolitan Life. So every state can have under Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the exact same thing to me. The state negotiates, but you get to pick the carrier.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that you don't have a government policy, and she's obviously in a group getting group rates under the state.
Well, I don't get in these discussions anymore in the real world. Sometimes I do on radio a little bit, but in the real world, I just, I understand fully willful ignorance and how powerful it is. People who want to remain ignorant will remain ignorant. It doesn't make any difference. And, you can say anything you want to say. You can provide any proof you want to provide, and it'll be, the person to whom you're presenting the proof will just deny it, ignore it, pretend it's not there, act like you're crazy for presenting it. But if she does become unemployed, if she did become poor, if she did lose everything like so many people are experiencing in this country right now, she probably would qualify for Medicaid, and I would imagine that if that were her only option, that she would not be decrying Medicaid or government-run health insurance. Yeah, I got to leave it there. Thanks, Nancy. Good luck with this person. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Melvin, he pretends that I am Murphy Brown. He'll say, are you ready? We'll say, whoa, Melvin.
The sale from Saturn is here with the biggest savings ever on every remaining new Saturn, or 0% financing for qualified buyers, plus bonus cash. Length contract limited. Take delivery by January 4th. It's 10 before the hour. Hey, we got a couple open lines here. So if you want to join in, now's the time to do it. 877-996-2556. We will be here tomorrow night, and Wednesday night is the Winter Solstice program. And then Thursday we're off, and Friday we're off, and all next week we're off. And during that time that we are not broadcasting, we will have, I guess the Christmas show, the Malloy Christmas show, will run two more nights, Christmas Eve and Christmas night. Right. And then next week will be Brad Friedman. Will be filling in most of the week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And then Thursday and Friday of next week will be, I don't know, encore performances. Encore performance, not the Christmas show again. No. Don't do that to people. But the Malloy Solstice Christmas show. We had a lot of soul searching about what to do this year because I'm so turned off by all religion. And after chatting with the executive producer and reading the emails that came in, I think we can kind of nail it down. We might do the reading from the book of Luke, which is the most mythological reporting of the birth of the Christian Messiah. It just is. And it, you know, it's also, as far as I've always been concerned, the most poetic, if that's the right word. So we may do that. I'm going to, bring Molly in for the night before Christmas reading, which is, you know, fairly pagan, fairly Celtic, I guess. I know, not St. Nicholas, but you know what I'm saying. The reindeer. They didn't have reindeer in Greece. Wasn't St. Nicholas a Greek? Anyway, the Catholic Church de-sainted him anyway, didn't he, years ago? Yeah, I think he's been de-sainted. What happens to ex-saints? Ew! They become Jewish? Muslim? I don't know. They don't just disappear. Maybe another religion has the obligation to absorb them. I have no idea. We also have a real nice piece written by Bridget Wolf regarding the solstice. It's a little bit different this year from what she normally provides. But you're going to like it. I was reading it today, and it's real nice. And then the what to me is an extra special gift from our program to you is the latest Bob Alexander written and produced Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe as performed by the Mighty Malloy Radio Players. Including, I think Molly has a little bit part in it, which was kind of weird. But anyway, so that's Wednesday night's program. It's a must listen if there is such a thing on the Malloy show. Wednesday night's program is one of those. That's providing all the equipment works and we don't have power failures and lightning storms and hurricanes and all the other crap that usually plagues us here. So that's Wednesday night. The Radio Gumshoe episode is, to me, it's one of the, it's the best one that Bob writes them and writes the scripts. And we do, you know, we do our actor's bit and then he provides the production. And then sends it back to us for broadcast. And this one is an absolute hoot.
This one is really good, but I have to say my favorite so far has to be the one where Rush Limbaugh was reduced to a puddle of goo. He ripped through his suit and he collapsed into a wading pool. I'm sorry, that was just... It's hard to top that.
Well, I think this one tops it, the one that we'll be playing Wednesday night. So stick around for that, or come back for that, or whatever, you know. Veronica is in Dallas, Texas, listening on XM. Hey, Veronica.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Hey, I wanted to chime in and let you know what I thought about Uganda, because I think it's a big deal.
Oh, that's I've been following that on Rachel's program last week about how the Ugandan parliament tried to make put the death penalty in place for gay folk.
That is a big deal. If that is allowed to happen, if that's allowed to continue, that'll be a one drop in the bucket. You know, you've got one country will do it, then the next, and the next, and the next, and next thing you know, if you're GLBT, you're going to be dead. You're going to be persecuted.
Yeah.
As a person that's bi myself, you know, I live in Texas, the place I live. I'm surrounded by a lot of people who are just pretty much up in my grill all the time to try to convert me over to their deal.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually at one place where a lady actually told me that my station in life was to have children and get married and get it done. And I was like, and I basically put my hand up and said, I'm not interested. She's what I would call a Republican. That's a Republican, but they're so right wing that they have the sexual maturity of a 12-year-old prepubescent boy. So they're a Republican. Look it up in Urban Dictionary if you ever get a chance.
Oh, is that where Republican comes from?
That it came from me. I created that Republican.
And, that's yours. Well, that's a good one, Veronica.
Well, it's all you'll note that on my site, on my Twitter, I'm afraid to advertise. I don't want to get anyone in trouble, but I'm Electro_Cat. I mentioned that. And this is going to offend a few people. I'm sorry if it does. But
well, I'll tell you what. You got to do it quickly. I have 20 seconds.
Religion is for the weak-minded.
We need
to evolve. And I love you for saying what you say about religion.
Well, amen. I don't think anybody who is a sentient being would disagree with that. Veronica, I got to go. Thank you. Thank you, Veronica. We'll be right back, Truth Seekers. Stay with us. This is the Malloy program. Thanks for either hanging around all this time or just tuning in. If you are just tuning in, boy, you missed a hellacious first 2 hours. Do I want to add anything before we go back to the phone calls? I don't think so. Dave is in Chicago listening on XM. Hey, Dave.
Hey, what's happening, Mike? I'm a truck driver. I travel 48 states, and you were talking about your book the other day.
Yeah.
Not only am I going to buy your book, many times I stop by bookstores, maybe once, twice, three times a day. I'll make sure that your book is prominently displayed, no extra charge.
Well, thanks a lot. It's written. What we're waiting for is I wrote it in such weird chunks, and my editor, you know, any writer without an editor is ridiculous. You got to have an editor. But the editor is Bob Alexander, who has written a lot for this program. And he is, you know, he's working on it, but he's got his own life too, and it's probably going to be well into the first part of the year before the sucker is finished. In terms of the editing process, there's an awful lot of stuff that he has to work with, and it's got to be something that not only reflects the attitude on this program, because that's what it's about, but also something that we both think is saleable. So it's all been written. I don't have to do any more work where that's concerned. He does. He's got to do the editing, and that's what he's working on.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. I'll be looking out for it, dude.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Dave. Take care, okay? All right. Bye. Drive safe. Safely. Drive safely. Yeah, I guess it's safely. 877-996-2556 is the number. Chris is in Menomo, British Columbia, right?
Nanaimo, actually.
Nanaimo, that's right. You told me that the last time. I forgot it. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Mike. Just a word about the book. When you get it edited and all that, that's great. We're going to buy a copy. But we're wondering if we could get online a digital unedited, unabridged copy. You know, the one that before you sent to Bob.
Well, we don't. It's not going to be online per se. You know, Bob will be emailing chunks to me after he does the first edit, so I can do this. You know how that goes. I'll do the second edit. He'll do the third edit. We'll keep flying back and forth here, but, an unedited version would be kind of clunky. He's editing for form, not for content. The content pretty much, will stay as it is. What Bob is doing is trying to put it into some kind of coherent flow. So what the finished product will be pretty much what it is now. But it would be too difficult, frankly, to get it all online right now. It's but
Well, the guys online think that maybe it'd be more telling if we could get your flow, what state of mind you're in when you're writing it.
Well, no, that'll be there. That won't be taken out at all. Trust me. That's one of the things that Bob's working on, is how many times it's acceptable to have the F word in one book. And I don't think there's an upward limit. So anyway.
Well, thanks, Mike.
All right. All right, Chris. Thanks for checking in. I don't mean to make it sound like it's going to be one long, you know, spew of invective and curse words. It's not, but you know this program. You know what you get when you come here, right? So, back to your phone calls. Well, no, we're not ready yet. What's up? Is everybody, what are y'all doing tonight? This is a Monday, for God's sake. Usually we are just overwhelmed with calls in here and have to keep delaying them and putting them on hold and not answering the phone. Is it because it's just 3 days before the winter solstice? But the number, we still have two open lines again, 877-996-2556 is where we're at. So... Steve is in Portland. You listen, Mike.
this bill is a horrible disaster. There's nothing good about it. First of all, it mandates that we all buy these crappy policies, but there are no cost constraints in the bill. Are you still there?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There are no cost constraints. So, and there are also no requirements that these companies change the way they do business. So. Let's suppose that they graciously condescend to accept somebody with a pre-existing condition. Nothing in that bill requires them to or prohibits them from charging quadruple or quintuple the premium rate. So I'm on board with Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham, hoping they can stop this goddamn thing.
you want to stop it. Why would you align yourself with psychopaths, though? I mean, they're...
Because, Mike, think about it. There is nothing in this bill that benefits the average citizen who is already suffering from either no insurance or incredibly expensive insurance that can be canceled at any time. if you look at this bill, there's nothing in it that, that controls the cost. So, it, as I said before, if someone is accepted, say, with a pre-existing condition, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm not saying anything. Go.
Oh, I'm getting an echo, I guess. I turned the radio off and I'm still getting it. The fact is that there is nothing good in this bill. It's been crafted by the insurance companies, and Obama and the Democrats have caved all the way along. And what we need to do is to kill it completely and start over again somehow with a bill that provides universal health care. This bill is not a good one, and I hope it doesn't pass.
All right. Well, and that's thanks, Steve. That certainly is a legitimate position. And I guess the bottom line, almost bottom line, that would be my position, too. The reason it is not quite my position, and I may be just a delusional, lost in space liberal here. Okay. And if that's the case, okay, I'll try to reform. But the reason I kind of, agree with what Krugman said, that, yeah, it sucks. But what do you want at this point? Do you want something that is a foot in the door, if that's what it is, to universal coverage? Or do you want to just tear it all up and shut the door and forget about it and start all over again 20 years from now? You know, I don't know at this point. I've been saying on this program, I'm sick of talking about it. I'm sick of watching what passes for debate in the House and the Senate. I'm tired of these lying sons of bitches on the right who come up with the death panels and all this other stuff. You know, I don't know what to say or do at this point. So my position is strictly for me. It's not for you. If you think, and a lot of people in the blogosphere who are saying kill the damn thing, a lot of people in the blogosphere who are saying no, it's a foot in the door. So I guess you go with the one that you think is right. I'm not advocating either position. I don't think I do that on this program, be an advocate. Oh, yeah, I talk about ending the wars, but as far as health insurance is concerned, reformation of how we get medical coverage in this country, I've made my position real clear. I'm in favor of the only possible solution to me is single payer. That's the only one. Socialized health care availability, not government run, not government employed doctors, but single payer. In the meantime, if this works toward getting that, hip hip hooray. If this doesn't work toward getting that, then I think it will probably crash from its own weight. I don't know. I understand your position. I understand anyone who's against this, anyone who says, okay, it's a toe in the door. At this point, I tend towards the Krugman camp. But you know my bottom line feeling here. I'm not going to advocate for any of it, frankly, unless it's single payer. The sale from Saturn is here with the biggest savings ever on every remaining new Saturn, or 0% financing for qualified buyers, plus bonus cash. Length of contract is limited. Take delivery by January 4th. Michael is in New York listening online. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm fine. You know, thinking about this whole issue, Krugman's point, I think it makes sense to a certain extent. I mean, I think it's a real gamble, but it makes sense if, for example, the Democrats actually have a plan to put together a public option or some sort of Medicare buy-in through reconciliation. I have no idea whether they do, but Harkin says that they're going to start working on that right away. As soon as the health care bill is passed, other people have said that. I don't know whether that's in the cards. It would make sense. I think it's the only way the Democrats could redeem themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it is a pretty bad bill. It's pretty scary.
Yeah,
be out-of-pocket costs.
I agree that it's a bad bill. And, I kind of feel like back during the campaign when, I was such a Kucinich supporter and I said, yeah, but when the door slams on Kucinich and any second or third choice, whoever the Democrats nominate, I will support. Not that anybody gives a damn who I support, but I mean just me. I would go into the booth and vote for that Democrat. And I don't regret the fact that I did. I'm not pleased with what Obama's doing, but I certainly don't regret the fact that I voted for him as opposed to McCain. Now, I could have voted for a third party candidate. I was not inclined to do that last time. The next presidential election, I will be.
Yeah,
well, I feel kind of like that now. I realize that this bill sucks. It really does. This so-called health insurance reform bill is not what it is touted as being by its sponsors. On the other hand, like I said earlier tonight, the fact that it is a punch in the eye to Republicans gives me some kind of childlike pleasure. I'm not saying I'm acting like an adult about this. I do believe that the only answer for this country is single payer. And I'll do whatever necessary to get to that point. Not that there's anything I can do. What the hell can I do? But go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's an interesting question. And I would say, I mean, so many people ask it. I think there are two things people can do. Right now, I mean, talking about a third party. For a third party to be at all successful, we have to build it. I mean, there aren't any third parties that really have the strength. The Green Party is loosely organized. It hardly has much of a structure. There aren't many people actually in it. But if there were more people actually devoting themselves to building the Green Party, it could become something. Also, the second thing people can do is just hit the streets, demonstrate, organize demonstrations. Because the corporations will roll right over us if they don't face any resistance, if we're just going to let them. I mean, they definitely will. I mean, that's really what we can do. And
all right. You're right, Michael. I'm certainly aware of that. And the idea that organization is absolutely necessary. I know. I just hope it comes to that. Michael, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. Email from Tony in Maine. He says, you're right about this health care bill. If it does eventually pass, it will be a baby step toward getting a single-payer universal health care plan for all Americans. Plus, if the Republicans are unhappy with it, then there must be something good about it. Are they not wrong about everything? So while I wish we did have a single-payer system in this country, we have to take what we can get right now and hope it leads to something better in the future. I know many on the left are unhappy, and I can see you are getting some flack for your position. But we have to remember the system we currently live under and think of it more like winning battles instead of winning the war all at once. By the way, the winter solstice officially began today at 12:47 this afternoon. Tony in Maine. Yeah, I knew that. Yeah, happy winter solstice. The health care bill that's passed by the Senate, the one that was passed by the House, I completely understand the positions, the pro and the con. For the time being, I support the idea that something got passed. I know what it is. I mean, insofar as anybody knows what it is. The goal has got to be single payer, but I just think a step toward that, if that's what this is, I don't know. You know, again, I may find out that, you know, I'm just pissing in the wind here, that there's really no there there. If that's the case, then I'll have to come on this program again and say, gee, I'm sorry.
Look away. Look away.
Before the hour. All right, Bears writes in regarding health reform. He writes, the so-called health care reform bill is like a square wheel for everyone but the greedy SOB insurance companies. It's insane to believe politicians will come to their senses overnight, cure themselves of their addiction of feeding at the insurance company troughs. There's no reason they couldn't open up Medicare and initiate single payer before the end of 2010. It's clear and obvious if we continue settling for blank, it's what they'll be content to sell us. He used the poopy word there, didn't he? Okay. Dave is in Shorewood, Minnesota, listening on KTNF. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Mike. How are you doing tonight?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, doing okay, I guess. I think the way this whole thing has gone down is just cries out for the Senate to revamp the filibuster.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just looking ahead at everything they want to try to do, anything from reining in Wall Street to the Employee Free Choice Act. You just name it down the road, we're going to be faced with the same amount of BS that we've seen here, and I can't see it ever letting up. And last week, Tom Harkin floated the idea, and he tried this like 15 years ago, and they never passed it, but it kind of put a damper on the filibuster at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really think it'd do that now, because these guys are so on the...
Yeah, I think the bill that Harkin and I believe Lieberman also was involved. I think I got this right. The filibuster, it would take 60 votes to break a filibuster, and if they didn't get the 60, then it would take 57, and if they couldn't get the 57, then it would take 53. And if they couldn't get that, it would take a simple majority, 51. I don't understand. I don't understand the whole idea of the filibuster anyway. Dave, thanks. It is obstructionist. The only familiarity that I have with the filibuster when it was used extensively was, I was too young to remember this, but it was used to stop, civil rights laws from being passed back in the, I think it was back the late 40s, early 50s. And Southern senators, white Southern senators, used the filibuster. I think, who was the guy that couldn't keep his pants zipped over here in South Carolina? So many of them. That old fart that died a year or two ago. You know who I mean. He was so effective at it. He was the one that started the Dixiecrat, Strom Thurmond. He started the Dixiecrat Party. Isn't that a cute play on words? Dixiecrat, Democrat, Dixie. But, the filibuster really and truly is nothing more than a tool to obstruct and stop real debate on an issue. And as such, you'd think that a reasonably intelligent, deliberative body like the Senate is supposed to be, that they would get rid of this. I know what I just said. especially since it is extra constitutional. And I love to hear these right wingers talking about, oh, we got to get back to the Constitution. Oh, really? Okay. Well, then get rid of the filibuster, you lying bastards. Paul is in Canton, Georgia. Hey, Paul.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Not too bad. Slightly change the subject. I didn't know if you saw that, but Ray McGovern was on Press TV today.
He was on which?
Press TV.
No, I didn't know that. No, huh?
Yeah, he was discussing that he thought that the U.S. Navy and the Iranian Navy should sign basically a non-aggression pact because he's very concerned about Israel attacking Iran and, you know, forcing us into the war. So we won't get involved with the war.
So he's suggesting that who sign a non-aggression pact?
The United States Navy and the Iranian Navy.
Well, that would, of course, that'll never happen,
right.
and McGovern knows that because that would mean an attack by Israel would result in the United States responding, and
right.
The United States would attack Israel on the same day that they're giving drinks of ice water in hell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he was worried that. That there's too many people in the Congress that seem to think that Israel's policies in the Middle East are ours and are good for us, and he's concerned that we're going to be drawn into a war with Iran because of Israel.
Mm-hmm. That is the fear. I don't think that would happen, though, unless it appeared as though Israel were under imminent threat. I think if Israel were to attack Iran, that the U.S. would go on high alert, but it would stay out of it unless it appeared that somebody else would get involved to go after Israel or the Iranians were getting the upper hand. And then I think... Well, look what happened when the Israeli invasion of Lebanon a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody in the Bush administration kept their mouths shut, including our crappy-ass Secretary of State, Condoleezza Rice. Well, there was murder and mayhem occurring, and an invasion of another country. The United States said nothing, just sat there. And I think that the same thing would happen if Israel attacked Iran, and the only way that we would get involved on any level would be if all of a sudden it appeared that the Iranians were either getting the upper hand or holding their own. And I think any full-scale or even half-scale military attack on Israel would result in the United States committing a military response, but I don't think short of that the U.S. would get involved. We might promote it. There might be talks right now between the Likudniks in Israel and the Likudniks in the U.S. government about supporting such an attack. Who knows? But I'll tell you what, if the powers that be on this tired old planet really want the end times to commence, just let something happen between Israel and Iran.
Yeah, because the Iranians already said they'll make sure they block the Strait of Hormuz and oil flow will stop and everything else, and that would cause a lot of problems for us, and that would draw us into.
Yeah, it'll cause a lot of problems for the whole planet because we have been dumber than hog snot in allowing ourselves to be held hostage to fossil fuels when we knew better. Any kind of a confrontation between Iran and Israel. Of course, the Christian Armageddonists, the ones who are waiting for Jesus to be all happy with all the death and come sliding down to earth, they encourage something like this. They would love to see. I remember going, and Kathy mentioned this a few months ago, going to those rapture-ready websites when Israel invaded Lebanon, and these sorry sons of bitches were already greasing themselves up so they could slide right out of their clothing and rapture on up to heaven. I mean, it's murderously insane. It's beyond criminally insane. It's murderously insane. But you're absolutely right, Paul. Or I'm right. One of us said this. If there is something violent occur between Iran and Israel, then game, set, match. It's finished, and I don't think there's any doubt about that. I really don't. There are too many people with too many countries with too many nukes and too much hatred and misunderstanding on this planet right now. And the overarching reality is global climate change is bearing down on everybody. The financial meltdowns, even though the U.S. stock market keeps, you know, stays up, you know, a lot of people in this country go, well, things can't be that bad. Look, we're back up to 1,400 or whatever the hell it is. You know, oh, come on, people. Come on. Come on. Come on. Oh, never mind. Come on, he says. Yeah, okay. Gary's in Cheyenne, Wyoming, listening on Sirius. Hey, Gary.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
Thanks to you and Kathy and Molly for having a Merry Christmas. Anyway.
Thank you. You too.
My point is I'm not real happy with this bill. I don't think anybody who has fought as hard as most of us have for as long as we have for something decent are happy with it. But I really equally angry with people like the caller a half hour or so ago that called in, and there's nothing good about it, everything bad about it, and you've got to just kill it and start over. Man, that's what the other side is trying to do, for starters. I mean, I can give you one example of something that's good. I've got a daughter and a son-in-law that have worked at separate places out in Oregon for almost 20 years, and son-in-law was laid off this spring, and they have a two-year-old with bone with a heart defect.
Mm-hmm.
Well, his insurance, I mean, he worked for a state university, and his insurance is gone.
Yeah.
They can't even afford insurance. This would provide something, and because they're living on one income and below the poverty line, they would get some help in getting some insurance. And there's thousands of people that are in that situation in this country today. I mean, I don't think that by and large the prices of insurance are going to come down. But I think it's a foot in the door and a step in the right direction. And I think we've got to keep on. And also, when I hear...
Hey, Gary, let me put you on hold a second. I've got a break bearing down on me here. Just stay right there. We'll come back and finish this up right after the break. Christmas Carol. 10 before the hour. We're talking with Gary in Cheyenne, Wyoming. All right, where were we, Gary?
Well, you know, I just think that there is so much misinformation. You know, I'm not a brain surgeon. I don't know all about this thing. I get my information from you and Harman and Senator Bernie, whatever his name is, up in Vermont. I can't think of his last name.
Sanders.
Sanders, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even Howard Dean, I listened to him.
Right.
And he's not happy with it. But his quote about killing the thing was not accurate, and he denied saying it that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so much misinformation. I've got a niece that has a daughter. She's 20 years old now. But she was born with a virus that destroyed her liver before it was born.
Mm-hmm.
And her medical bills have been horrendous, but she was on her parents' insurance. This bill will allow her or force her to be able to stay on her parents' insurance
for another 7 years. Mm-hmm. And her, she had a liver transplant when she was sick. And periodic rejection medicine is $1,000 a month. You know, there are enough good things about it, but I'll take the poison pill and take it, even though I'm not happy with it, because it'll help a bunch of people.
Well,
and hopefully we can keep pushing and prodding and make the thing better.
Well, I hear you, Gary, loud and clear. Thank you. I hear you. That's all I can say. You know, they say all politics is local, and you can't get any more local than your own family. And you know, it's fairly easy for me. I've got health insurance through my union, and it's easy for me to be. This is just a Malloy testimonial, to be critical of what the Senate and the House and the Obama administration, what they have done under the guise of health insurance reform. It's very easy for me because I don't have family members who are on the verge of bankruptcy or into bankruptcy because of a lack of health insurance. I don't have family members who have chronic situations that are impossible to pay for without health insurance and can't get the health insurance because of pre-existing conditions. So while it's easy to criticize what has been done, I just wonder, and I'm not trying to be a jerk here. I'm not trying to challenge anyone who says that this is garbage and should be killed. But I'm just wondering, would all the people who are saying kill it, kill it, kill it is no good, would they still be taking that position, whether they're writing in the blogosphere or calling this program or calling Hartman or whatever you do? Would these people still be so adamant in opposing this if they had a situation to deal with, like the family of our last caller, or anybody out there who is desperately in need of health insurance? I don't mean to make this into some kind of a weird psychic wrestling match, but the fact remains that, you know, that infamous or famous statement, all politics is local, and can it get more local than your own family, your own children, your own daughter-in-law? You understand what I'm saying? So if the people who are will be most directly affected by this, in the sense that this will give them access to health insurance, is it cool for you or I to say it should be killed? And I'm just tossing the question out there. I'm not looking for an answer, but I think it's one that ought to be considered. Don't you? I mean, seriously, if there are hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people who will benefit from what the Senate is doing and what the House is doing. Look, I hate them all. I agree with that. And I think the whole thing is not half a loaf. It's a tenth of a loaf. And it may be a payoff to corporate America. And it may be the insurance industry is going to get even wealthier than they are. Okay, well, then let's take to the streets and round them up and cut their heads off. Let's bring out the guillotine. What do you want to do? But if, on the other hand, there are thousands upon thousands, hundreds of thousands of families that are going to benefit directly from this, what do we do? You know, and those are fair questions. Not requiring answers, but just thought. That's all. And that's the basis that I say it's a foot in the door. I don't like it either. But when I get a caller like that, and I get the emails, and I get dozens of them, of people who may agree that it's not what we should have in this country, in terms of federal or national health care, but it's something that will rescue their particular family. And then you multiply that by the hundreds of thousands, if not literally millions, of families that will be rescued by this. What do we say? What do we say to them? Well, I'm going to take the intellectual or the political point of view that it sucks. And if you are a casualty to my attitude, well, you know, that's the problem here, right? I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.